and welcome to this week's episode of Observations. I am your host, Sovereign Sire, and I am brought to you by the good people at Julieland.com. And as always, with me is my, what would I call you?
Fearless leader.
Fearless leader, uncomfortable sidekick.
Exactly.
Richard fuck. Avery. And my guest today is Alex Blagg.
Hi.
Say hi. Yeah.
Hello. Greetings.
How are you?
I'm great. I'm just glad to be podcasting.
I think he's like a little overwhelmed.
It's been
a
while. Do you want to, like, well, you're on the show.
Easing back
yeah.
into the saddle.
How many podcasts do you think you've done in a lifetime?
I've probably done, I don't know. I was going to give you a jokey answer, but the reality, probably like, I don't know, 12 or something.
Oh, cause I was going to say, like, in the life of a comedian, like, asking how many podcasts they've done is like asking a porn star how many scenes they've done.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah.
Except, 100,
I have way more shame. So much more shame.
I love podcasts. I listen to them. I guess I'm one of the few people that hosts a podcast that listens to podcasts and enjoys them. And I love them long. I don't mind a 3-hour podcast.
Pete Holmes, shout out.
Yeah. Like, I don't.
I have to admit, in 10 years that I've been making them, I've never really listened to anybody else's.
Really?
And I finally did last week. I finally listened to a Joe Rogan one.
Okay.
And I was impressed.
Yeah.
I actually liked it.
Yeah.
If you look up any podcast that features a woman named Miss Pat,
okay.
Holy shit. She is like, has one of the most incredible life stories I've ever encountered. Just incredible. She's writing a memoir now called Rabbit, which was her street name when she was selling crack when she was 15 years old with two babies. Wow.
Oh my God.
Like, she is like the most incredible life story. She's a comedian, but she just did like a little junket, like kind of mini junket where she was on Mark Maron's podcast. She went on Joe Rogan's podcast and a couple other ones. And like, she's so charismatic and so like vivacious and vibrant. And her life story is so like just unbelievable.
Yeah.
That like, it's like you're enraptured. I mean, 2 hours and you're just like, I have to know everything about you.
Yeah.
Like, that sounds fascinating.
Yeah. And so I love podcasts because like sometimes you stumble upon people like that. We're like, oh man, like I could listen to this person tell stories, you know, like forever.
Yeah. I've been trying lately because I do listen to podcasts because I drive a lot. And so that's what I do in the car. And I've been trying to branch out. And because I feel like at this point, you reach a moment in which I've literally heard every single comedian talk about every single problem they've ever had in their whole life. They're like people that I've never met in person, half of them, but I know them so intimately, and I'm like, at what point did we decide that we need to know literally everything that any comedian has ever thought? So now I'm like trying to get into stuff that's less comedy focused, I guess.
And, branch out maybe.
Yeah, branch out a little bit. There's this this one Invisibilia, and then there's a Tim Ferriss, that guy, the body hacker dude, is kind of interesting. Yeah.
I just think the whole thing about podcasting right now is insane. Like, it's given everybody just, I got a podcast. Like, you meet somebody, it's like as bad as like, I got a MySpace page, I got a Facebook page, I got a Twitter.
I think podcasts are kind of like the new blogs, where it's like everyone's got, like, there was that time when like everyone has a blog, da da da, and like now it's everyone has a podcast because it's easier to talk than to write.
Yeah, and it's easier to listen than read. I agree. I just don't have time to sit there and like read some bro's like 4,000 word rant about.
So
Mad Men.
Why don't you tell it, like, so I brought you on because I follow you because you produce a show called Midnight. Do you want to tell people what that show is and kind of a little like who you are?
Sure. Sort of? Sure. Yeah. So I guess most notably recently, I'm the executive producer and co-creator of a show called At Midnight that's on Comedy Central, At Midnight. It's hosted by Chris Hardwick.
Have you done his podcast?
I've never done the Nerdist podcast. No, I'm not famous enough for this. He's got like Tom Hanks and shit coming on there. I think I am very low on his list of people that he wants to have on.
Hey, you're verified.
I am verified, right. I send him an email every day, like, Chris, for real. Twitter says that I'm a verified person.
So what is At Midnight? Like, what?
At Midnight is a social media fueled game show in which three comedians compete to see kind of who has the funniest jokes and who has the funniest take on whatever happened on the internet that day or in the news. And then also, you know, we find just weird, funny videos and pictures and random shit from the internet. And then we kind of create games out of it where they sort of also make jokes based on that. So it's kind of a fake game show in that, you know, there are points. People get points for making funny jokes, but you know, there's not really any prizes and nobody
wins a new car.
You know, we say you won the internet and you're the funniest person online for the next 23 and a half hours until somebody else wins the show the next day. So it's mostly like, you know, bragging rights or whatever, which I guess, you know, among comedians is not insignificant since they're all.
Well, they get to be on TV.
They all want validation.
You'd be surprised how easy it is to get people to come on this podcast. Yeah. I thought it was going to be like much more difficult, but it turns out that people really love to be heard and seen and adored.
Do you just troll Twitter for people like me who are like, nobody invites me on your podcast anymore?
I was honestly, as an outsider, it's hard for me to gauge prestige. So it's kind of like I have people that I follow because I think they're funny or whatever. And there's certain people where it's like I'm very sheepish to approach them and then they're immediately like, yeah, I'd love to do that. And I'm like surprised because I'm in my mind, I think they must be so busy. It's a little podcast. Yeah. And so when you tweeted that, I was just like, oh, okay. I didn't know I could ask you. You know what I mean? So it's because as an outsider, it's hard to tell.
That's like one of the cool things I think, maybe about Twitter is that there's a lot of bad things about it, but I think it is interesting how it's kind of like broken down some of the walls that maybe weren't even real that people had about them or you kind of perceive about, I don't know, like there's famous people and stuff that I've kind of interacted with on there that the same thing, like where I'm like, I can't believe that this person is like joking around with me right now.
I made a comment on Ricky Gervais one time and he actually retweeted my tweet and made a comment and I was like, cool. And then I think like a minute later you could see like he probably then checked, what is Julie Land? And then he looked and went, oh, shit. And then he deleted the tweet.
Oh, that's a bummer.
I know. I kind of...
Especially a guy like Gervais. Yeah, you would think. No holds barred.
That's what you think. I thought like...
Doesn't care about offending anybody.
Back before Richard Dawkins became insane.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but
He tweeted at me something about... I had tweeted something about people disrespecting my profession or whatever, mm-hmm. or just assuming I was stupid, but like I'm actually very educated. And then and he tweeted at me, he fully investigated your work, and I see nothing to be disrespected. And I was like so proud that Richard Dawkins,
one of the leading philosophers of our time.
Hey, I had that. That was a pinned tweet until he got a little crazy, and then I was like, I'll just unpin that now. Yeah.
I haven't been following the latter part of his career.
He's become so militantly atheist that it becomes obnoxious to the point where it's like now he's become sort
you're
of an embarrassed. Yeah, I'm like you're as embarrassing as Islamophobia and all this kind of stuff is not really helping anybody.
Everybody goes crazy eventually.
I think he's probably the world's most famous public intellectual.
Sure.
I think after
Hitchens
died, was Dawkins. It was like this public intellectual, and that now all of us that are intellectuals are like, whoa, it's a little. Yeah. Get a little intense. Yeah. I think we're just going to back off of that one.
Chill out, Dawkins.
And you just know that he's probably like sitting at home just like drunk as fuck, like on painkillers, just spewing shit.
It's funny how like, I mean, this is something I've noticed in myself in the way that as you get older and you kind of evolve into, you know, you become sort of, you self-actualize, right? But I don't think you ever reach this point where you just are who you are. You know, you're always sort of changing and growing and stuff. And like what I've found is that, what happens with that is that if you're putting your opinions out publicly, I mean, and the internet, obviously, as we're saying, has made it really easy to do that. I find myself constantly in a situation where I look back at something that I said publicly and published, you know, that thousands of people read. And now as an older, maybe wiser, but different person, I'm just like, oh my God, like that's so embarrassing. How dumb. And like, it's just not what I believe anymore. And the fact that like, you know, I don't know, like somebody like Dawkins, like I think with religion, like I went through a phase where I was really angry, right? Where mm-hmm. I went to a Christian school growing up in the South, like a Baptist high school. And it was just every Wednesday they would have, you know, it would be like hypocrites shoving, you know, Jesus down your throat. And, mm-hmm. And so I went through this period where I was just like, so kind of like militantly, violently opposed to any kind of religion. But then you reach a point where you're like, oh, I don't have to care about this. Like, I don't believe that stuff anymore, but I don't need to make it like something that I'm going to get angry about or what. I don't know.
I went to Catholic school and I know what you're saying. And I was
brainwashed
so
early
you,
on, you know.
When did you, back to you on the topic of you, like, so You grew up in a, was your family religious?
Were yeah, you... yeah. And my parents are still religious. And like, again, like there was that period of like teenage rebellion and kind of in college where we would like have these like big argument. I would argue, I would try to convince them why Christianity is inherently flawed and wrong. And at a certain point, I think as I got older and maybe a little bit more mature, you realize like, I don't need to convince anybody. Like, if it makes them happier, right?
It just doesn't matter because we're all going to die anyway.
Did you start as a writer or as a comedian? I mean, do you think that maybe, like, I know that I grew up, I was raised atheist, mm-hmm. much to the chagrin of everyone that lived in my small town. My dad was militantly atheist.
Yeah.
And, like, it kind of made me feel superior to other people because I felt like they were irrational and crazy. But it also was, like, this very kind of, like, isolating. Like, there's also this thing where it's, like, I was always sort of, like, the... You know, like when you're sort of the one that's going yeah, like this like is kind of dumb. It's like you kind of makes you this outsider.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm also a writer. I write a lot, and yeah. I discovered myself kind of as a writer in that same period of time. Like, you know, when you get into high school and you start kind of questioning.
Yeah, you just start putting it all.
Yeah,
down.
You start yeah, kind of like, yeah. Like, did you start as a writer or as a comedian? And like, yeah, when like, did you discover yourself that way?
My earliest days, it's funny because I was actually like in high school, I was kind of a jock for a while where like I played three sports and like, but I never really liked sports. It was just always something that my dad played college football and he always kind of like, you know, not forced, but like, you know, nudged me in the direction of sports and I was okay at them. And so like, I just did that. And then my senior year of high school, I like quit the football team. And then in the South, this was like a controversy or whatever, which is so dumb.
Front page news.
Yeah. Front page news.
I'm fascinated by Southern culture.
You know, it's like, it's kind of in a smaller way that way. Like my high school football coach is now like this big college football coach of like a major university. Anyway. So I quit football to go out for the school play, and it was mind-boggling.
They just think he's yeah, gay. He's got to be gay.
Yeah, either he's gay or he's lost his mind or he's like on drugs.
I keep thinking the scene out of Heather's with like he's drinking Perrier. He's gay. Yeah, it's like yeah. they're gay. They had Perrier.
They just have no context to understand how a starting football player would quit his senior year to go be in a play, not even a good play, but. Doing that, I think I got this sort of performing bug, and so I was like, you have to take a theater class when you do that, and so the teacher would have us write sketches. That was really the first thing where I was like, oh, I like this, because it was just like about like I was writing the you know dumb things to kind of make you know the other teenagers in my class laugh, and that was where I was like, oh, I like to write. This is something I would want to do. And I didn't journal. Like, I wasn't ever a serious writer, I don't think. My writing was always comedic to some degree. And anyway, so then I went to college and decided in college that I wanted to work in film and television and be a writer for film and television. And it was like the time, it was, you know, it's so embarrassing to admit this, but like it was the late 90s and it was like around the time that Good Will Hunting happened. And the Ben Affleck, Matt Damon narrative around that was like the first time that in my life at least, like it became, it was like, oh yeah, there's writers, you know, and granted they're actors and celebrities now, sure. But if you're a impressionable high school kid, like that was the way that I realized like, oh, somebody writes movies. And
yeah, you think.
They can win an Oscar for one.
Right.
And, yeah, you know, think Pacino just makes it up as he's talking.
Yeah,
nobody writes that.
Yeah, and I got really into that, went to school for it, kind of but lived in Memphis, Tennessee, where they're just obviously they don't make any movies or television there really. And so after college, I moved to San Francisco because, I don't know, it seemed like a step in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was like too kind of scared to move to New York and I felt like I didn't have any contacts in LA and I had a friend that had moved to San Francisco. So when I got there, I started doing stand-up comedy as like a way to kind of just like develop and get a foot in the door into the entertainment business of some kind. And I did that for about 3 years and a lot of the people that I started with are now doing, you know, great, like Moshe Kasher and Brent Weinbach.
I love him. Moshe. Yeah. Moshe's really great.
Yeah, he's amazing. I'm still friends with those guys. And so I did that. And then at the same time started blogging, like kind of writing comedy on the internet. And these are like early days, like 2003. Mm-hmm. Before that was like a very common
thing. I love
thing.
How 2003 is the early days.
I mean, it was before, you know, it was before Facebook. It was before even MySpace. It was like, was before, it was weird still then to like put your thoughts out onto the internet and self-publish things. Like it was like nerds did that, you know?
Yeah.
It quickly, but I caught a nice wave because what happened is like, you know, Gawker and Defamer and Huffington Post and all those things started to pop up where people began consuming media that way. And I was lucky enough to kind of, you know, parlay it into a career that was sort of, that actually became my foot in the door in show business. Yeah. And so I actually quit. I moved to New York to take a job running a blog, a website for VH1's show Best Week Ever. Used to be on, it was just like comedians talking heads. And I did that for a few years. And that's kind of, at that point I stopped doing stand-up because I was, that I was writing a lot more, and then
who has the time?
Yeah. Well, and I also like never. I respect stand up a lot, but I never loved standing around in
it
a bar
for
4 hours to do 7 minutes of material for a room, a half empty room of people who don't give a shit. You know, like,
right.
And I just wasn't. I also wasn't as good.
That's not exciting.
Not for me. I mean, it's exciting to get laughs, you know, and like that was that's like a crack hit of attention where you're like standing on stage in a room of people are loudly approving of you is it's addictive. I get why people like to do it, but I just it didn't fit my lifestyle that well. And so I moved out here to take a job running this other big site and kind of felt like I was getting away from my initial goal of writing for film and television.
Sure.
And so I quit doing that. I quit the internet kind of publishing stuff and really focused back on just like writing my own material. And that's around the time I created the Bajillion Hits character
and
site.
I love that site.
Thank you.
Oh my God. I was just watching the video today and I was like, it's just so like seeing all the tech startup, like to me, it's one of those things where it's like watching, like, oh God.
Yeah.
It's like literally everyone like I went to school with, like,
yeah,
that's what they do now.
Yeah. I will. Cause like spending all this time in like MTV and Viacom and VH1. And then even at my jobs that I took out here where I was running these internet sites, I had to have all these meetings with like these guys that were like social media experts that were getting paid like 10 grand an hour to come in and be like, you gotta set up a Facebook page, like it's
right.
You gotta engage and blah blah blah. It's just like using all these like shitty buzzwords, and I always thought it was really funny.
They're so full of shit.
Yeah, it's like the
big time.
Yeah. And so I created a character that was trying to be the worst of them, and then also the worst of my own my own baser instincts and my own kind of grosser like the parts of myself that like I think love attention and love the internet for the wrong reasons and the shallower things about myself. I kind of tried to channel that into that character, but then I did it for a few years and it was like, I just couldn't, it was just like being like playing just a total asshole all the time. I found to be exhausting. And so
you have another show, right? Betas.
Yeah, I wrote for a show called Betas. I didn't create that. That was a show that was it was sort of like Silicon Valley on HBO. We were actually a little earlier than them, and it was Amazon, their first slate of their kind of like,
shows.
You know, their shows. Yeah, which there was Betas and this show called Alpha House, and we were a show. It was a comedy about like four guys in Silicon Valley.
And John Goodman was in the other one you mentioned.
John Goodman was in Alpha House. Yeah, we were the one without any big celebrities except for Ed Begley Jr., who is a delight. Miss you, Begs.
And not a big celebrity.
Not a big celebrity, but a lovely guy. But he was definitely, I think, you know, he was the most famous name
That's
on
pretty
that show.
Scary when you say the most famous person we had was...
Yeah, well, now John Daly was also on the show, and he's probably, I think maybe he's eclipsed Ed Begley Jr. Shout out to you, Daly.
That's funny.
Yeah, and it was really fun, though. It was like a great cast and like a really fun show, really fun people to like to make it with. The other writers and creators were great. I think it was, you know, it was like bad timing where like HBO came out and did a bigger version of the same show that they got nominated for Emmys, and it was
but that happens all the time, especially in this world. One thing I've learned living in LA all these years, like, you can't really get attached to these ideas because, honestly, God, I've said it for years, everything's been done.
Yeah,
and, you know,
sure.
It's everything's been done, and there hasn't been an original idea since the wheel, And, you know, when somebody comes up with some new show, you're like, yeah, I saw that. If you look back, I saw that before. In music, you're like, oh, I heard that before. Like, my brother used to always say, yeah, I like Marilyn Manson, but I liked right. I liked him when his name was Alice Cooper.
Right.
You know? Right. That's how I feel about Sex and the City. It was way better than Golden Girls. You know?
Sure. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's like, exactly. you can, and you go back further than for Golden Girls. I mean, like, there's a, everything's kind of ideas. When they jokingly say Hollywood's out of ideas,
yeah,
because there's only so many.
But it's not just Hollywood. I mean, that's the, another funny thing about like Twitter and the internet is every now and then I'll have an idea for a joke and then I'll stop myself and I will search it. And
yeah,
there'll
you
be like
that's
40
kinda,
people.
Yeah,
had
was like,
same
sort of like that. Yeah, that like the zeitgeist of that. Like, yeah. Sort of, yeah. There was kind of like this
that
collective
thought.
Kind of, like so in being a, like, are you still any closer to doing like?
Yeah,
are you,
you, know,
are you
I
working
mean,
on a movie?
Yeah,
are
so I wrote a movie that was on the blacklist, which is like this thing that they every year they put together a list of like the best unproduced screenplays that, you know, I don't know, like agents and managers and stuff vote on. And but getting on that list kind of is great because it helps sometimes like jumpstart your script into to
right.
getting developed. So Sony Worldwide ended up buying it, and so we're hoping to shoot it this year. I mean, anything could happen, but. Yeah, that movie is called Fuck, Marry, Kill, and that's getting made
oh
this
God.
Year, I think. And then,
I do Fuck, Marry, Kill all the time on my websites.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, with everybody. Like, Fuck, Marry, Kill, like, we always play, like, I did it with Ash and Mo last time, but, like, I always do Fuck, Marry, Kill, Captain Crunch, Count Chocula.
Yeah. It's a fun
Lucky
game.
Lucky Charms, you're like, and that's...
Yeah, awesome. Ironically, we called the movie that, but we never play the game in the movie. It's like about three guys. Saying,
it's just like, somebody gets killed and somebody gets
no,
fucked.
No, nobody even, that's the thing. We like, we it's false advertising.
And so my question is, do you think they're going to stick with that title with Fuck, Marry, Kill?
No, well, there's been a lot of talk about that. Right now, I believe it's F, Marry, Kill okay. is where we've
what's,
landed.
What's funny is, I do a, let me talk about me for a second.
Yeah,
let's talk about that. So I'm also a writer, mm-hmm. and I do a history show called Boss Bitches of History, and it's mm-hmm. On YouTube on a channel called Wisecrack, which does another show called Thug Notes.
Yeah,
which,
I think I've heard of
okay,
that.
Okay, so
yeah.
Thug Notes is like, it's going to BET, they have like an accompanying textbook,
right.
like all this, la da da. So they found me, we worked together, we developed a show, it's like a talking heads show about like compelling women in history.
Sure.
And it's funny. Like
yeah.
the whole idea is like to breaking their lives down and their and like the reason for their relevance or impact, like breaking it down into a way that's like really accessible and fun.
Yeah.
So but originally we were gonna do the show Fuck, Marry, Kill. We were gonna like sort of get different famous people from history and then do like a rundown
oh,
on each
fun.
One. And like we ended up like how we ended up changing it around was because we're like, how are we gonna get around the Fuck, Marry, Kill like
yeah.
FMK? Like
yeah,
and I was
like
oh
bad,
you just neutered
SEO.
It, you know? But that's really funny because it
yeah.
was sort of like.
Well, you
so
do.
We're running into the same problem.
Yeah, no, but
yeah, yeah.
let's.
I hate to say it.
Talk about the zeitgeist,
you,
I guess.
Yeah.
You do what I do, okay? And this is done. I'm giving myself. I bought the URL kissandfuck.com.
Uh huh.
And so, because I.
You just sitting on that bad boy waiting to, to cash
oh, I,
in?
Totally.
And, yeah.
But I was smart, like, oh, yeah, you can't say fuck. So I also bought snogandshag.com.
Ah.
Because you can say snog and shag. So you can say
gonna
shag.
Get, you're
going to
pull down
well,
some British
I mean,
pounds.
Yeah. It is kind of like a weird thing. So I star, write, look, co-write, co-star, created the show. And we just had to go in, like, we did four episodes. And then, like, it was went through and kind of got screened through
mm-hmm.
the people that need to see it before they... Cause it's like a big, it's like an operation. It's
sure.
like, it's,
yeah.
it's YouTube's like real TV now.
Yeah.
So it's like, they're like paying you and they're
yeah.
getting grants and they're, but like, it's kind of like, it's a very interesting experience, but they ran it through their, you know, people that watch it and they're like, oh, it's great. It's amazing. They wanted to go in and like, sort of like cut out like all of this, like a lot of instances of cussing. And so then we had to
Did
sit down and I'd like
oh.
fight for, I really want this fuck right here.
Right. Right.
Like I'll give up that fuck to get this fuck.
I'm
you
sure,
know,
like, I'm sure, you know, the old, like, let's give some notes on this. Like,
yeah.
Well,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, but
like,
it's more
oh,
thing
I got
of like,
notes. Like, I don't want
in
notes.
A modern age where, you know, so what I'm doing is technically edutainment.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care that I do porn, but mm-hmm. we never talk about the fact that it's
right.
not billed as a porn star talking about history. It's
right.
just a person that's funny talking
right.
about history.
Right.
Like, so, but at the same time, there's concern over the level of like how much cussing is there. And I think it's this interesting problem, like in today's culture where so many things are permissible. Like having to negotiate, like what's too much?
Yeah.
Like, it's okay to have someone doing like educational comedy, whatever, and have, you know, it's the Sasha Grey effect. Like having
yeah.
done that, people are kind of like, eh, but your brand is kind of cerebral, so
yeah,
it's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
But there is kind of a lot of cussing in it, and
right.
it's like, well,
that's what
but it's, you know, like,
yeah, yeah.
I mean, I get it, but it's kind of like interesting, like in the way things have changed, like how we market things and who we're marketing to.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Well, I mean, YouTube, I guess, especially so much of it is like, it's driven by like 12-year-olds, you know?
Right.
Like, I mean, literally like the numbers on YouTube, you know, like are insane. It's baffling where you'll see these like YouTube stars that have billions of views, that more bigger fan bases than fucking Brad Pitt or,
right,
or Tom Cruise or whatever. But it's just like these armies of tweens that are watching their stuff. And it's like, as a producer, I will sometimes try to watch and understand, like, why is this person so compelling, so popular? And it's hard because it's like, you got to put your mind, you have to put your brain in the mind of like, okay, I'm like a 12-year-old in Korea, you know, what do I want to see? And it's just this like bozo in his closet being like, well, and like, you know.
Well, that's the, yeah, exactly. And it's funny. That's what I do with the Julie Land universe. I think about like what, I don't think like me, I always say, I have to think like, what is everybody else going to be into? So and some of my dumbest videos I've made, whether it's Ash brushing her teeth naked or doing dumb things, seem to be like where I get the most hits on or the most views of. It's like the weirdest stuff that you think is so dumb.
Yeah. It's hard to control like what people
and the
are
thing you really pour your
to.
Life into art and you're making this, I'm making this great thing. And you're like, and they just they don't get it. They don't care.
Everything. Right. Every time I have like, even like a tweet or a joke that I'm like, this is fucking hilarious. This is going to get so many RTs. It'll be one that like I posted, like nobody even faves it. And I like shamefully delete it in 5 minutes. But yeah. So like, were you getting notes from YouTube themselves?
No.
Oh, just like the producer that you're working
with. Like they're,
yeah.
But they had, we filmed the show. So they came to me in July.
Yeah.
And then I pitched them an idea. And we pitched back and forth, like trying to find like what it was going to be. That took a few months. Then we sat down and they had writers and I said, can I write it instead? And they said, okay, we'll give you a chance. So then I wrote it. We bat back and forth with that, got 4 episodes. So that happened. Then we recorded it by November. We had recorded like the first 4 episodes of the show. It's launching in June because their algorithms and all of their whatever said that that was the time. This is the time when you can put it out and it's going to hit and it's going to.
So funny.
Right?
They figured this shit out. Like,
yeah.
To a
like, and it was that thing of like, no, we're still excited about it. It's, we just want it to hit. But like, you know,
but
because.
The scary part about it all is it's just like I hate is just like, that's why I created what I created is because I don't answer to anybody and I deal with this all the time. Like, you've got to do something and you got to make sure that they're happy and the so-and-so's happy. Then you're going to do, like, I just do what I want.
Well, I mean, like to be fair, I feel like, like, given whatever, like, it's like I was given an unbelievable amount of control and, like, you know, these are people that, like, absolutely believe in me. Like, they put a lot of what they have in, like, behind producing this. So at the end of the day, it's like on, you know, the strength of someone that is essentially, you know, a sex worker, like that with like no, you know what I mean? Like that they still looked at that and have like, they looked at what, you know, I came in with and said, this is good. We're going to dump everything we've got into this and we're going to do it.
That's great.
That's like amazing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I'll wait 4 months for it to come. Like,
sure.
Like, that was no
for
problem.
Sure.
Like I'll give it 8 months.
So it's not out yet?
June 16th.
June 16th. All right. Check it out.
So I think by the time this comes out, it will be out.
Great.
I'll totally like, because I'll be like, you need to RT this 5 times.
Yeah. Guys, this is the hottest new show on YouTube. Check it out.
Now you have to turn it into a joke on your show.
Yeah. Try to fit it in there somewhere. Yeah. Make a game out of it.
Well, it's kind of fun because doing this show now, there's so many stand-ups now that we're like, oh, come, oh yeah, let me come punch up some stuff. Let me come, yeah, I'll be on it.
Yeah.
Because it's just it's a fun show.
Comedians are cool people. I like them. I always have.
They're deeply damaged, cool people.
Yeah, but they're more great. More damaged than any porn star or rock star I've ever met.
Yeah,
so,
everybody creative that's doing anything interesting is.
And I always say, and you know what's really worse than all of that is being a photographer. Like, I used to always jokingly, in the totem pole of life, like, there's comedians and porn stars underneath, like, 3 feet under the dirt, we're holding up that totem as photographers. Like, we're way, way down at the bottom.
Yeah. So you seem super damaged.
You have no idea.
Well, I think at least like with comedians just seem smarter. Like comedians and writers are just smarter. They discover themselves. Like, I don't know. They just seem smarter. Because what you're doing is you're creating commentary. So it's like you have to kind of have those critical thinking skills.
Yeah. I mean, it's the whole job.
So, yeah. So like to me, like I love hanging out with comedians and writers because like you can talk about ideas.
Yeah.
And debate ideas. And like that's really cool.
As opposed to, yeah, I've, you've had like a lot of people. That was one of the reasons I was excited to do this. I feel like you've had a lot of people on that I like and I'm fans of and stuff.
That's so awesome.
Everybody that's come on, I'm not kissing anybody's ass, but everybody's come on has been amazing.
Like I only ask on people that I really enjoy on Twitter and that I like really enjoy their work. And I'm always like so flattered when someone says yes, because I'm just afraid they're going to be terrified of my job.
Like, no, no.
You know, like you know, like some people are very, very precious in that way, and I get it because for some people, like it really does make a difference. It, you know, people will be upset.
But it's the same thing. Like what I always worry about is like I would say, yeah, people don't want to be associated. Oh, it's Julie Land. Oh, it's porn. I'm like, I'm not porn, so don't worry about it. You're not doing something for Hustler. You're not working with a company that. What I do is unique. Period. Yeah. So I was like, So I always tell people, like, don't worry about it. Your reputation's not going to be ruined.
Well, that's what I like to approach people on Twitter, because they can go look at my feed and they can see that, like, I don't post very many pictures of my vagina. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is, like, intellectual humor or, like, news stories. So they kind of get an idea that it's probably not going to be, like, Howard Stern or something.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't think that you guys were going to make me come here and, like, ride a dildo machine or something.
But, I mean, that would be a moment ripe with comedy. Well, we don't... Well,
that's
for
the second. You would get so many hits.
Well, we're not periscoping yet. Yeah, right, but when we start doing that...
Then things are going to get really crazy.
Yeah, then we're going to expect a lot more. So I think we're up for time on this particular episode. Yes. It was a pleasure to have you.
It was a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Can you tell my audience where to find you and... What, like your web addresses and your
just on Twitter at Alex Blagg, AlexBlagg, and watch At Midnight on Comedy Central at midnight.
All right, thank you for coming by.
Thank you.